In the world of politics, we're used to fiery voices and iconic characters bursting fully formed onto the scene. And often, politics is a stage set for old and mature actors. What happens then when a young activist becomes a national symbol before fully becoming herself? Naledi Chirwa arrived mid-explosion. A student activist, radical feminist, parliamentarian, mother, believer, a firebrand. What parts of the girl from Mamelodi still survive inside the MP? Here to tell us her story, in her words, on her journey, her politics, her hopes, one of the youngest parliamentarians in the 7th administration, Ms. Naledi Chirwa Mpungose. It's interesting to me because I did quite a lot of research coming into this conversation.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that about you and the older boy. But you know what I did find out?
Yes.
So you studied drama.
I did. I'm a thespian.
And so what does that mean? Does that mean that the politics found you in the theater, or has theater now found politics in you?
They're in the same space.
Okay.
Yeah, I think when you're younger, it's different. It's really just performance art, you know, because I started very young. Like, for as long as I can remember, I've always been on stage. If you start clapping for me, I'll show you exactly how they do it.
So different kinds of dances. Do you always think you were going to be famous?
I've always known I'm going to be a performer.
Okay.
I like art, you know. I like theater. I love theater. I still frequent theater quite a lot. In fact, I make a theater the other time. Bing bafone le, ngifuna ukubuka show. Maba pendula ifone, bangiphendula ngegama lami. But hi, na lady, and I'm like, oh my god, are we there now? You know. So that's how much I love theater. But I've always done like stage performance art. From primary school all the way to high school. I had a little break, I think, when around grade 5-6, because I got hurt in Yawin Lam. And at the time, I was supposed to get amputated. So I took a break, and I didn't get amputated. But it kept recurring. The wound kept opening up, because on our way to a performance. And then I was off of stage for like a few years, and then in high school, I got back into it. In varsity, I found my tribe again. I was part of UP OVOA, a traditional ensemble. And I was studying drama as well, you know. Film, theater, stage, performance, painting. I paint in my free time as well.
So do you think that, because, I mean, there is a lot of performance within your party, political outlook, the way that you presented yourselves, right? Yeah, because there's the costumes in terms of how you dress and present yourselves. But there's also quite a lot of projection and performance in it. So for you, is the performance a shield? Is it a mask?
You know, it's so funny that you're asking me this, because a friend of mine reached out not too long ago and was like, don't you miss, you know, being on stage and doing theater? And I thought about it. I was like, I'm thinking, do I miss it? And I was like, no, but I'm still doing it. You know, I still write. Maybe not a play per se, but I still write my debates. I still write speeches, and I still deliver them on a podium. You know, so one could say it's a stage, and it's still televised. It's film, you know. So you're correct by drawing those distinctions. I think they are very much prevalent. I think there's different ways of accessing people. Umunye ubethudlala ngami lapha ku Twitter engitshela ukuthi debate yam poem. I'm like, clock it. You know, clock it, because I also need to do poetry as well. You know, so a person could draw those distinctions. I think there isn't much a separation, especially if you're a trained thespian, and then you start knowing that really theatre is politics, drama is conflict of society, it's the study of conflict in society, primarily, you know, interpersonal conflict, political conflict, community conflict, but at the heart of it, really, it's drawing to stage what is on the minds of people, what is in the hearts of people, you know. So and that's what politics does serve as well.
So when did you first realize that you have a voice that can move people?
I think, because growing up, I used to stay with my granny and my brother. My mom was still working. She was in the retail space. So I spent a lot of time with my grandmother. And she would take me with to, I went to a meeting, like, you
know,
town hall, and all of that. And she was very vocal about issues. This is before I even made sense of what's happening in the world. But I always knew that if there's a meeting, whether it's a church, whether it's a, you know, a cell group, my granny will speak and she will raise issues, particularly that are confronting Langvela Kone Mamelodi, you know. So that foundation was laid a long time ago. Even in primary school, that was the case. You know, even if in primary school, it's really just, you know, make believe, if I may, you know, with leadership and all of that. But I've always been there as well. In high school as well, I think it got worse when I got into high school because then after grade 9, I left high school and I went to an FET college. I went into an FET college and then I contested for SRC presidency. I was 15 at the time. And then I became the deputy president of Tshwane North College in Mamelodi. And then the issues that affect people really then became my daily bread. You know, issues of accommodation, of textbooks, and how deeply they are mired in how young people get to function or not function at all. Gabuyele schooling ke because e college year ang shire that year. So I had to go back to high school and I am Mamelodi secondary. That's why I finished my matric. And even in high school, that was the case as well. You know, activism just always made sense. You can't find comfort where there's injustice. It doesn't matter how small.
And then fees must fall.
But fees must fall comes way later. Because in grade 11, I remember we mobilized ourselves. Namanga and Mamsi to asimfunu Shakespeare, sifunu South African realism. And shortly after that, then we got to engage with John Gani's work. And then it was structural. I don't know if there was somebody at the top who they were having the same conversations as us, but we know that it happened in our era, you know. And the same thing happened in Varsity as well. So Afrikaans Must Fall happens. Insourcing now happens where we merged the student movement and the workers' movement shortly after the inaugural conference of the EFF Students Command in 2015. I think 2 months after that, because that was in June, 2 months after that, and the groundwork started happening for Fees Must Fall, because now we're getting notices, school fees siyanyuka manje, and we already have issues of fees. We already have friends that are at home because they've got historical debt. We already know of people who did very well in high school who don't have access to education. So the commodification of education really became not just one of the tenets, but one of the focal points that we had to raise as that generation, along with the issue of white supremacy as well. Njengoba ngisho ukuthi in Africans Must Fall also came up, and insourcing now. So these were structural issues that we battled with, like, as young people, you know. That is why a youthful voice is so important, because it's on the pulse, you know.
So, I mean, I remember that Fees Must Fall movement and the rage, and I think this is, rage is something that powers a lot of young people.
Yeah.
Do you think that rage has played a role in how you have formulated your activism?
Absolutely. I would say that, because there's no comfort in the current status quo, you know, whether it's affecting you personally or you're an observer. And when it comes to identifying rage, I wouldn't say that it's an individual thing. It's a collective thing. So you're right to encapsulate it in the context of young people, you know. Rage, absolutely. You have to be angry. You have to be offended. But the foundation of that rage is love, you know. So I'm a scholar of Steve Biko, you know, since Varsity days. And I think engaging with text and conversations around Black consciousness really seats the love inside of you for Black people, where you start taking offense when you see the lives that Black people live. You take offense at the apartheid spatial planning, because now you see it, you know, uti, oh, mina manyeka nye Mamelodi, and Mamelodi environment inje. And it's not just Mamelodi, there's hundreds of other townships that are fundamentally created to be able to birth the kind of environment we find ourselves in. So rage becomes the second next thing to react from that. But the first point is absolutely love. You know, you get offense when you hear about children dying in pit toilets.
So that's a fascinating dichotomy, right? This rage and love.
Yeah.
Do you think that activism hardens people? Do you think, you know, it kills something in you sometimes?
One would say that from an observation level. I think as an activist, I'd say contrary, because it awakens you. You know, you really do feel alive. It's almost like melancholic music, you know.
So are you then this absolute, completely awake and sensory feeling, as you say, of all of the hardships of people around you? That's your public life, right? Yeah. In your private life, is it the same? Are you the same person in both places?
I think
you
I
have
am.
The same kind of rage?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think the political is personal and the personal is political. I share that sentiment very deeply, you know, because a lot of the outside makes its way to the inside. Because these are human beings, you know. Sometimes you dig way too deeper in your pocket than you afford because there's an issue here at hand. There's a child who doesn't have registration fees. And I'm a minister wa penduli. And as far as I penduli, or they respond too late. And ingane nai, inawela, you know. So the human element definitely is connected to the collective element as well. That is how we create community. Community is made by individuals as well. In as much as it's a collective effort and collective strides, you know, it is. My eye. Something got into my eye.
You okay?
Oopsie, I don't know what that is. Probably my eyelash. Sorry about that.
No.
Sorry about that.
You're just a human. You're just a human.
I really am. My eyelash went whoops on the inside. So you're part of the. The fact that it's collective doesn't mean it takes away from the heart as well. Abantu esikhuluma ngabo, like umuntu mayekuthumela iDM athi ngise clinic manje, I want to have a termination of pregnancy, but the waiting list is 5 months long. And you already know the economic impact of a woman who gets to keep a child they don't want to have and what their life will look like. You know, part of that is also justice as well, you know, and that's a human interaction. That's directly personal. You get to hear of people's deep issues. You get to hear about sexual violence of children, of young women, of men as well, of boys. Mm. There were some boys who got sexually assaulted in some school in the Eastern Cape not too long ago. And it was a big story. But for some people, it's just news bulletins. You know, but when you're an activist, you think of the human. Those are children's lives that are changed forever.
Do you ever feel like the activist public persona consumes your private life?
It does. I think because ganingi mawenzi activism, obviously you come out bold and strong and courageous because you want the message to be heard. But behind doors or behind closed doors, there's not necessarily that urgency. You know, my mom always says that I'm the sweetest of all her children.
Oh, wow.
You know, I think I'm quite reserved. I'm very shy.
Shy people are too shy to say I'm shy.
I promise you, I really am. Yo, ngiba anxiety nje. If owning part is anxiety, nabantu bang part is anxiety. Ngiba tanda bantu, you know. But you know, when you're an introvert, the social batteries run out. You know, and
so what has been the cost in your private life? So the activism, the public persona, the rage, the activist. What would you say has been the private cost of all of that?
There's no rest. Yeah, there's no rest. Your phone is always on loud. People can reach you at 3 a.m., you know. So your life really is a life of service, even in the personal as well. You live a life of service indefinitely. It doesn't stop. Because the problems haven't stopped, you know. And I think it will be the case until we move towards socialism. So we do make peace with that. I know I have. To know that we've given over our lives to the people for the emancipation of our people.
One of the things that I find very fascinating
yeah.
for public figures, political figures, is that you also live within an ideological framework.
Yeah.
Right? And the EFF has a very strong and stated ideology.
Yeah.
And I'm often fascinated to see how on social media in particular, people have an expectation of you being ideologically pure.
Yeah.
And you have this other spiritual life.
Yeah.
Right? Do you think people struggle that you are this outwardly spoken feminist and still have this spiritual life? Do you think people struggle with that dichotomy?
I think they don't struggle with it in relation to me. They struggle with it as people who are also experiencing that dichotomy as well. We see the world from where we're standing.
Mm.
It's as simple as that. So if you have certain spiritual conflicts, you will pick up those conflicts.
Mm.
And if they don't exist for you, or you found semblance in your own personal life, that's how you'll be able to take in the world as well. Mina ngikhulele esontweni, for as long as I can remember. Grew up at Mamelodi Baptist Church under the stewardship of Dr. Gentile, who's also a black conscious academic. You know, he writes on theology and black consciousness. That's the environment where I grew up, right? And I think when it comes to religion, for me, there really is no conflict. Particularly when you look at, so I'm Christian, and his walk, then you see there really is no conflict. Jesus Christ goes into a church and he finds people selling. And out of anger, he starts throwing the tables off, right? And that is not just the moment, you know. That is fundamentally ideological. It speaks to the grotesque nature of capitalism, that it has no timing. You know, whatever is personal, whatever is sacred, it puts a price tag on it. And he disturbs that environment. So as a socialist, I'm like, oh, I see you. You know, I definitely see you. Jesus Christ comes out and says, umuntu odlwengu lingane must have a big rock tied around his neck and thrown into the sea. You know, this is Jesus Christ. And for somebody who seeks ideological purity, they wouldn't find it in Jesus. They would find justice, but definitely not ideological purity. That's one of the things that were a point of contestation throughout his journey of becoming the Messiah, right? People who wanted a purity of what was written in the old texts, and they were not finding it there. Why are you doing God's work on a Sunday or on a Sabbath, basically? And you'd say, but there's a need now, and I'm here now, and God is here now. You know, my figure at the pool of Bethesda. That's what he does.
So how then do you deal with the mocking, with the even glib comments that have been thrown your way? How do you deal with that? You don't deal with it.
I really don't. Okay. I really don't. I think because, you know, some of our lives are so public, you really can't control everything. You can't control what people feel about you. You can't control what they take from certain experiences. And also what I've picked up is that the love is always more than the hate, you know. But obviously people are wired to be able to pick up what is the opposite, you know. I think as human beings, for some reason, we are wired like that, to pick up what is negative and all of that. But I'm on the other side, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm there. You can check my Twitter and my Facebook, the comments that I respond to. I want where there's love, mm-hmm. where there's nice vibes, especially for talking to human beings. You mm-hmm. know, I have no time to entertain what people are saying that is negative. They have every right. You know, I won't chase them for it. The only problem that I have is when people start lying on somebody's name. That is why it was so revolutionary for me when our commander-in-chief decided to take Ungizwe to court for lying about Uti's getting money from the Nigerians and all of that, and he wasn't able to prove it in court. And Manuse Kichimapans na Pezul, you know, that was so important for me because we really have to draw a distinction from having just the disdain for someone and rooting that disdain in lies and character assassination. That is where the territory or the playing field starts becoming not what we want, you know. Deal with the politics. If the politics are attached to the person, yeah, add that, but don't lie about the person, you know. Even in parliament, it's always standard procedure that if you're going to speak about the person, you must run it through the proper channels so that it's a point of debate. You know, although we contest it, but we've got that freedom. But there's also like a set of rules in how we can engage with human beings. If you're going to lie about the nationality of my parents, for example, my mom is finding out with everybody that she's Zimbabwean. and my dad as well. My dad is a son of a Sotho woman from Free State. But all of that doesn't matter when somebody has made up their mind about you. That's why it's important to not care, you know, because it doesn't affect your personhood. It doesn't mean that, for instance, citizenship. You know, I'm a child of the soil. I'm a child of this land. I have every claim to this land, like everybody of this land. I'm an African child. And if my blood is made from different facets or from different geographies of African people, there's absolutely no shame in that. Lady Gaga, is it Lady Gaga? I forgot. Lady Gaga, in one of her interviews, she says, she's never addressed the issue of her being transgender. And Bayambuza, why have you never addressed it? And she's like, because once I address it, then I make it seem like it is wrong to be transgender. Mm. You get what I'm saying? Mm. You know, so you also have to garner that kind of wisdom to be able to not address things by alienating the people who are of those communities. I can't shame Africans because I want to set a point to it. No, but I am South African. That would be doing exactly what the field is now turning into, which is what we're something that we're completely against. You know, there is no shame in being African. There's no shame in being born in a different country and seeking economic prosperity in other nations. South Africans do it as well. There's many South Africans who are in China or in the USA or all over the world. Not too long ago, we got a report that over 60 South Africans were being deported from Ireland after those xenophobic attacks. But even in that context, it's important to be able to frame it correctly. Because in Ireland, there's more Caucasian immigrants than there are black immigrants. Mm. But you look at the videos and you see who's being attacked, it's the black immigrants, right? So it's not always xenophobia. Mm. Most of the time, it really is Afrophobia, and it happens everywhere. Black people are hated everywhere, including us.
And when talking about labels,
yeah,
and thinking about all the various labels that have been put to you,
yeah,
including radical feminism,
yeah,
right? In a society and within a spirituality,
yeah,
that is very masculine,
yeah,
centered, how do you find a balance between those ideologies and how you have described yourself?
We're human beings at the end of it all, and our fight is that to humanize the human being, starting with the most marginalized in today's world. That's black women, it's black children. We take offense when people would say women and children like in the same sentence, you know, something that would rub us the wrong way. But now I've grown to have an appreciation of that characterization as well.
Oh, really?
You know, to say children actually go through so much and they are so forgotten in society. You look at children with special needs, for example, you know, even in provinces like Gauteng where things are perceived to be modern and urban, there's hundreds and hundreds of children with special needs who are sitting at home, not because they don't want education, not because they wouldn't be happy or eager to be exposed to a classroom, but because the facilities are not there.
Do you think, talking about women and children,
yeah,
do you think being a mother has softened your activism?
Yes, yes. And it has definitely strengthened my love for children. You know, so my 10-year-old boy, Mungameli, he's autistic. And that has exposed me to a lot of societies and communities, you know, for women and parents who are raising autistic kids. I form part of different WhatsApp groups, Autism Ekasi, Awesome Mamas, Zining, where we create our own little community so we can give each other support and take each other to the right channels if we need assistance and stuff like that. So yes, motherhood has definitely put a bit of soft in my touch, you know. making those bottles at night does soften you to an extent. Changing those nappies, you know, dealing with tears. It really does make a mama out of a person.
and what has that meant to you as a, in an institution like Parliament?
Yeah.
And again, another widely publicized
yes.
issue with the sick child and yeah. not being able to show up.
Yeah.
Do you think that enough is being done to reform?
Oh, absolutely not.
These kinds of places to allow women to fully participate.
Look, that's why socialism is so important. Because the liberties that we speak about today actually are seated in socialist feminism from inception. It's socialist women who looked at the state, who looked at the private sector and said, you need to start contributing to raising these kids because we raise them and they become laborers for you when they grow up. That is how a subsidy for raising kids comes from. That's where it comes from. That's where child grants come from. They don't come from somebody just sitting down in their office in their deep voice and thinking, oh, maybe we should do AMA child grants so that we can help women raise their kids. Or maybe we should subsidize early childhood development. You know, those are socialist feminist victories. And it then puts the onus on us, women of today, people who subscribe to socialist feminism today, to look at the economic disparities that still affect women namhlanje and to raise those. The first one is the issue of wage inequality. In South Africa today, there is still a 27% wage gap between men and women. In a democratic country, 31 years into democracy, women still earn less than their male counterparts. Right? Those are issues that we must raise. Number two, masikhuluma nabantwana besikolo, bayasitshela ukuthi cha, nalendaba ye-NSFAS allowance, ayinayi equity. We can't be getting the same amount of money when we don't have the same needs. We still need to get pads as girl kids in the tertiary education space. But it's not catered for in the allowance that we get. I'm just raising some of the issues that we would subscribe, particularly on the gender divide and how fighting for those,
And as a parliamentarian,
yeah,
in a parliament that is very well represented,
yes,
of women, representative of women within parliament itself, and in the various parties,
yeah,
do you feel enough of that voice comes through, or do the male dominated issues still take center stage?
I think we are still far from a fair and a divide that represents our demographic status, right? Women make up majority of our population, but they don't make up majority of the executive, for example. They don't make up majority of the parliamentarians. In the EFF, for us, it's the case, right? I think in 2016, GenderLinks released a study at the time following the elections. I think it was local government elections at the time. And they were looking at the representation of women, not only from a media space, but also at councillor level. You know, and I think when you go at local level, it's even more grotesque. You know, which is quite absurd because we lead everywhere. In the churches, it's us. In our homes, it's us. You know, But when it comes to positions of authority and responsibility, we're always sidelined. There's still a lot more that needs to be done. It should be modus operandi that nothing less than 50% of women representation. This isn't just semantics. In fact, people who say, but why are you making it about gender? Really, I'm making it seem like women can't think when we carry the thoughts and the discourse and what happens in the country, both logically, both in conversations. It's women who carry the conversations. I mean, if you look at the political dynamic right now, women actually are the feeders of the conversations that we have politically as well. You know, so we definitely need much more parliamentarians. We need more laws that are geared in that direction, and we need more support when we move towards that direction. Last year, we had a motion that Parliament must investigate AMA statutory rapes, but not just statutory rapes, but all pregnancies of children. It cannot be that we live in a South Africa where a 12-year-old child can report a pregnancy and that doesn't automatically result in a criminal charge being investigated. That child walks into school carrying the evidence, gives birth to the evidence, and nothing is done unless a case is open. So such things should definitely be reviewed. And our laws do have space for that, but I think there's also some other semantics that prevent us from pursuing justice for children, especially children who are victims of sexual violence. For example, amanesakhalanye victimization. Uthi cha ingane zafika la emaclinic and we see they are pregnant, sometimes they want to terminate, and we know the process that we must follow, but we get victimized by the perpetrators. We get victimized by their families. So our systems need to be able to protect even the healthcare professionals, protect the teachers, the school principals, and the personnel that is supposed to protect these kids. Because currently we don't have a system that is able to do that.
Why do you think it is that after so long, there's still this resistance? Are women also complicit in the resistance?
Yay! Yeah, you know, patriarchy doesn't keep itself afloat. Sometimes we not only become the victims, but we become the enablers. This is in the interpersonal relations we have amongst ourselves as women, in our homes, you know, in our churches, where women will be looked down upon because of certain experiences that they have. A woman will be chastised because they had a teenage pregnancy, because they are divorced, because they are not married. There is no perfect way of being as a woman currently, because ngishonela abashadile nawo bayayithola induku somewhere. So there is no perfect persona for a woman, except the fact that you will be chastised at some point in your life. And it's not always by men, sometimes it's by us, you know. Humanizing women also means being able to see when we are the perpetrators as well. Presenting a perfect victim or presenting a perfect human being doesn't guide our struggle, because then we're unable to hold each other accountable on the basis of gender.
So then what about you? Are there parts of you that in order to advance your political career, you've had to hide or keep separate from what you project?
I don't think so. I don't think so. You know, I really do believe in being completely authentic, you know, regardless of what the backlash will be. Be authentically you in every space you are in. There's a picture that I saw sometime last year. It was about we protest Africans Must Fall. And ngigqoke iwedge. Ihilia wedge, a campus in, and I'm thinking to myself, no, Shem, we were really contesting the space, you know, to say there is nothing wrong with femininity. You know, in every gathering we go to with young people, we will always encourage women. Nawi kwijo, kipi kwijo, we'll sing, you know. And obviously, because we are so wired to be accepting of male leadership, it takes time for women to hear I voice yomfazi kipi kwicho and to sing along. You know, we always have to say, why ningaculi makuculi umfazi, you know. But it's changing. And I've got many videos on my phone of young girls in meetings who are rising up, saying their point of orders, about kipa makwicho, who are leading from the front lines when we are doing our marches and our razzmatazzes, you know. But really, it takes... Some women have to walk for some to be able to run, you know, so the wheel has to keep moving. We always have to be existing in the ways that we do. Come to the meeting with your pencil skirt. Speak in your high-pitched voice. You don't have to masculinize it to be able to be heard, you know. Even if they feel like it's a bit too screeching or whatever, do it how you are. Be authentically you, because this world is ours as well.
So history... One day, many years from now, when it introduces Naledi Chirwa, what do you hope they get right about you?
Oh, man. That I was part of a collective, you know, that wanted justice for our people. Yeah, if they can get one thing right, is that we wanted our land back. And not just in rhetoric. There's been countless of operations that we've done as an organization to occupy land, you know, that we wanted our minds back, that we wanted justice, that we wanted a decolonized education that is able to feed into the socialist future that we envision, you know, that I was part of a collective that decided to map a different South Africa, geographically speaking, because we always speak about apartheid spatial planning. And the onus is on us as the generation of today to start mapping out what South Africa should actually look like that looks like justice. You know, if not Soweto, then what? If not Mamelodi, then what? What does this future look like? Because otherwise we run a risk of recreating the patterns of oppression. I really hope that they remember that I loved black people, that I loved black women, and I loved black children, and I loved black gays and black queer people, that I loved black children with special needs, you know, that I spoke for them, that we spoke for them, that we stood up at the height of being silenced by different operations, you know. Mangikhumbula kahle from university, the victimization has always been quite heavy. Even these things that we speak of on social media, there's an article that I read in 2020, and the guy was speaking about how these xenophobic sentiments that are thriving on social media were actually being funded. And the amount he quoted at the time was 1 billion. This is in 2020, right? So it is also important for us to be able to separate the noise from real conversations that are happening on the ground. When we get to our people, they show us so much love. So really, when they remember us, I really hope that they count us amongst people who loved black people.
That's amazing. I think that's gorgeous. You know what I've always wanted to do, and I'm going to test it with you.
Okay.
First time ever.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to do a rapid fire question segment. And so I'm going to test it with you because okay. I think, and I've got 6 questions.
Yeah.
And the answer must be short and sharp.
Oh, that's so difficult.
And some of them are yes or no questions. Okay. So, and I'll tell you if it's a yes or no question.
Okay.
But okay, let's start with this one. And these ones are going to be, they're a little bit also about status quo, right?
Yeah.
Because we haven't spoken about politics of the day because I really wanted to just get to know you.
Yeah.
And I think the audience would love to know who is the girl.
Oh, I'm just a girl.
That's become this voice, right? So here, starting now, rapid fire questions.
Right.
Starting with, what is this GNU administration's biggest shortfall?
Prioritizing the establishment.
Okay. And their win? What's their biggest win?
None.
No wins.
There's no wins. There's no wins. I can't think of any. I'm sorry. I can't think of any.
Okay. What is the one problem that you think South Africa, everybody, administration, all the people, what is the one problem that we should all be working tirelessly to address? If we can't, there are lots and lots of problems, right?
Yeah.
But if you were to pick the one that we should all be concentrating on solving this one problem,
yeah,
it will move the dial.
Economic inequality and corruption.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's two. Here's a yes or no question. Do you think Fees Must Fall succeeded?
It has successes, yes.
Such a politician. Yes or no? Yes or no?
Sometimes.
Okay. Another yes or no. Are your peers outside of politics doing enough to change the status quo?
Yes. Yes. But.
But what?
They're not registered to vote. There's 12 million of young people who are eligible to vote, and they could change the direction of this country at one go. But they are not on the voters' roll. That for me really aches because we could decide, literally decide as young people alone, without the women, without the men, without the gogos, just us, 12 million of us who are not registered, this country would take a different direction.
Okay. If the youth of 76 were demanding a better education, what should the youth of 2026 be demanding of their leadership or government?
Economics, eradicating poverty. Yeah. food poverty, land poverty, education poverty, menstrual poverty, you know, poverty, poverty eradication, land poverty, mining poverty. We are a nation in poverty, leadership poverty, you know, administrative poverty.
I think that was cool.
I will exam long pay on I want to go about the Ama.
I want to test drive it. I think it's cool. I think, and we can cut it into a little thing. I love it.
Oh, that was difficult.
Was it difficult?
Yes, because I wanted to expand and explain.
Yeah,
no, lie for real.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you for coming. Thank you for sharing your time. Thank you for sharing your heart with
us. Thank you so much.
I think it's wonderful to see young people taking charge, taking, and hopefully we will see you as an old people.
Yes.
Still fighting strong. So thank you.
Thank you
and
so much.
Good luck with the babies.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Yeah. I think I had a great time with you guys. Did and you? Greetings to all your watchers on the net. Ikelian Tanda, make sure you are registered to vote, guys. Ask me about banning and doing one, please.